Hey, it's time for Windows Weekly, our first show of the brand new year. Paul and Mary Jo are here to take a look at what's ahead for Microsoft in 2013 and what they wish would happen. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrod and Mary Jo Foley, episode 293, recorded January 3rd, 2013. 40 beers in 30 days. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Windows1. And don't forget to try their brand new developer platform for complete code control. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers your, Microsoft Windows needs. Not just Windows, though, my friends. Xbox, Kinect, Surface, all the little Microsoft things.
cute little
Microsoft things. And ladies and gentlemen, here they are. Fresh, rested, relaxed, and ready after a couple of weeks off. Our New Year's babies, Paul Thurrott of the Microsoft Windows Supersite, Superfight for Windows, Supersite, WinSupersite.com. And Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. Hello, kids. Did you have a good New Year's? Did you party?
Yeah.
Mary Jo, yes, did you drink beer?
I did. And I even started a beer challenge on January 1.
All right. What is that?
I have to drink 40 styles of beer in 30 days.
This is, by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is the opposite of most people's New Year's
resolution. Most people, I am going to drink less beer. Mary Jo, but I am going to drink more beer.
Yeah.
No, see, here's the trade-off, though. So to do that, it means I have to go to the gym a lot more. So it's helping inspire me to go to the gym to offset the beer.
It's a kind of a backhanded, I'm going to work out more resolution.
Yeah.
Got it. That makes
sense. That's incredible.
And what is your, Paul, what is your New Year's resolution? More Black Ops 2?
Yeah. No, I'd like to be more active this year than I have been.
That's good. I'm building a gymnasium
in my garage.
I will probably
drink less beer as a result. What are you doing?
I'm building a gymnasium in my garage.
Oh, wow. Nice. Really?
I'm building one in my office.
I may be wrong, because goodness knows there's a lot of eBay and Craigslist slightly used gym equipment.
Yeah, that's for sure.
but I think if it's right there, that I might use it more.
That's why I've got this thing behind me.
Common myth. Do you use that thing behind you a lot?
I use it every day.
Good for you. I'm gonna put a TV in there.
I just stand on it. I don't actually. I have to stand on
he
it.
Stands the TV's and drinks it. Beer on no, it.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a cup holder. It's nice.
The character in Neal Stephenson's most recent book, Reamed, used to be very, very fat. He's a programmer, and he got very thin by putting a treadmill under his desk, and he's actually always walking while he's working.
Right. Actually, standing desk is my next thing.
Yeah. I think that would work. Yeah.
Yep. I don't think I'm going to be able to walk and work.
So Mary Jo's going to drink 40 kinds of beer in 30 days.
I don't, Mary Jo, maybe you don't understand the notion of New Year's.
And Paul's going to try to stand up. Now you should combine those two. That'd be a real challenge.
Together, that would be tough.
That's awesome.
Now, just testing those beers doesn't mean you quaff. A liter of them. It could be.
It sounds like it does. It sounds like
it has to be a pint. A pint.
It has to be
each.
A pint.
Wow.
Maybe a pint or more, or does it have to be exactly a pint?
It depends on the style of beer. It comes in different glasses depending on the style. So it's a challenge that my local bar has. And if you do the challenge, you get your own mug with your name on it.
Oh, you should. You should have your own mug if you do the challenge.
Should.
You know, my Pilates studio says 30 classes in 30 days. This is kind of like that.
Kind of.
No, it is not. No. Those two things have nothing in common.
Will you do 1.3 a day?
Or will you do two every day and then have a weekends off? How are you planning this?
Well, so far I did three on day one and two on day two. Today we'll see.
You're on pace.
Yep.
Well, that's how these resolutions are, though. You always start off strong.
You do.
And then it kind of goes downhill at the end.
You just crack me up, Mary Jo. You just are. That's so adorable.
I'm a contrarian.
I love it. Makes me want to do that. You're going to inspire a whole nation of beer drinkers. And these are, I presume, exotic craft beers. We're not talking Schlitz, Budweiser, and
Bud Lime.
Rolling Rock.
Yeah, Bud Lime.
What is
all
Bud Lime?
Super locale. No, none of them are
none
locale.
None of the above.
All,
yeah.
I,
that's awesome. Yeah. Well,
so more trips to the gym.
Yeah. If you did, 40 beers in a month and 400 push-ups, maybe.
I don't recommend going to the gym right after going to the bar.
No.
This is just based on personal experience.
Yes, I agree.
It doesn't really work.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. I'm very easily sidetracked, and that really sidetracked me. Let's talk about, you actually have a great topic prepared for today's show, and I hope you watched, and if you didn't, folks, watch the last 2 weeks of episodes, because Paul and Mary Jo did kind of the year, what happened in the year that was great, and then followed that up with a best of, which I think you and I agree, Paul, it was really good.
2012 is yesterday's news, Leo.
Yeah, but we were surprised how good that was.
Actually,
when you put it all together, it's actually a good show.
Yeah, exactly. We did exactly. We created exactly 60 minutes of good content last year,
yeah,
so that was
impressive.
Nice to get it all into one.
Yeah,
one episode.
No, I really enjoyed it. So if you didn't see the best of, do watch it. Tony did a great job putting that
together. I hate watching myself, but I did kind of enjoy.
No, it was great. And I think it sets the tone for today's episode, which is the year ahead, what we're looking at in 2013. Do you both agree this will be a critical year for Microsoft? This is not a let's coast for a while.
Year. Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Definitely a very critical year.
Yeah. The success of Windows 8 still kind of up in the air, although it's kind of hard to think that any version of Windows wouldn't be at least a qualified success, just automatically, right?
Yeah, I think the Windows 8 stuff has to be put in perspective, but it's a tough thing because in many ways we've talked about the baseline that Microsoft has, 20 million units a month, and it seems like unless the PC industry itself completely implodes, which by the way it certainly could, it should be able to achieve that. And I think that for Windows 8 to be truly successful, though, it has to be more than that because Windows 8 targets this market for devices as well. And this is something that potentially is going to be a much bigger market over time. So it's clear that it's gotten off to a slow start, but it's still an open question about whether, that will change over time.
The analog to me is Google Plus, where you can't not use Google Plus if you use a Google feature. It's kind
I've
of required. So Google will say, hey, we've got 400 million users or whatever the number is. But yeah.
It's a little cheap.
Yeah.
If you want to use YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of it's not exactly the same, but Microsoft has just this advantage that, for instance, try and find a Windows 7 computer. It's hard. You really almost have to buy a Windows 8 computer.
I tweeted about this just today, actually. It is very similar because you're basically forcing something on users in order to have it gain traction in the marketplace. And the only difference is that, Google, because Google Plus is an online service, it's something they can retroactively add to stuff you're already using. Whereas with Windows, because it's more of a traditional bit of software that comes on new devices, they're not retroactively adding it to Windows Vista and Windows 7. Like, you pretty much have to go buy a new PC to get that. You just don't have a choice when you buy that new PC. You're going to get it. The Google Plus stuff is a little bit more insidious because of that aspect of it being an online service. But, thankfully, the antitrust regulators are going to come crashing down hard on them, so we don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. Oh, wait.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, let's talk a little bit about, both of you know quite a bit about what Microsoft is going to do in 2013, but I imagine you also have some speculation. For instance, we know that there will be another version of Windows this year.
I don't know. Pretty we don't really sure. call it a version, do we?
Is blue not a version? What is blue?
An apology.
Is it service pack? Would it be called service pack one in a different age?
Yeah.
No,
absolutely.
I think it's more like a feature pack than a service
like a plus pack almost?
Yeah. More like service pack with at least a couple new features of Windows added, supposedly.
Okay.
So, you know, Microsoft still hasn't acknowledged that blue exists. We just know it from leaks that we've had.
Oh, really? For some reason, it felt more formal and official.
No, we've written a lot about it and talked about it a lot, but we don't know that. But the rumor is, comes out in the summer of 2013. And then there's been all kinds of subsequent rumors about what blue might be, like that it might be optimized for 7-inch tablets, of which there aren't any right now, I don't think, in Windows RT or Windows 8. I think it's HTC is rumored to be making a 7-inch Windows RT tablet, so that will be interesting if it's somehow optimized for those tablets.
I have to say, having used the iPad Mini now for a month or two, that it is I prefer it. I like 7 inches.
Preferable size, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
Well, for that kind of device, it's a...
Well, I wouldn't want to use it with a keyboard. It would be nutty.
Right.
So it couldn't be a keyboard surface. It would have to really be a tablet, pure tablet. I don't know if Microsoft cracked that pure tablet thing yet.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, the current Surface is pretty good and obviously is a beautiful machine. The hardware is beautiful. It's not hard to imagine a 7-inch version of something like this that played games and you could watch movies on it and, you know, run the simple apps and so forth. That'd be fine.
Okay, blue. And do we have a time frame for blue?
Summer. We keep hearing summer 2013. So I think towards late summer was the implication. I even heard August at one point.
Right.
That's the guesstimate.
All right. But it doesn't sound like something to go crazy about.
Well, I mean, you have to look at it in the context of what else is going on at the company. I think the big thing that's happening last year and then this year is this transition to either overt online services or at least an online services style servicing model, if you will, where things get updated more frequently, not on this kind of monolithic path like they had before, every 3-4 years, whatever. And so I think that's the kind of thing you have to look at, whether it's server, which I've never heard anything about, or Windows client, or Office, or Visual Studio is doing this as well, where these things kind of get updated over time like online services do. And it's a tricky business because this is software that is installed locally on your computer or device, and so that's kind of an interesting thing that they have to tread there. But obviously for them to compete with the Apple, you know, iOS stuff and Google with Android and Chrome, they need to be at that speed. And so I think actually this time next year is going to be very interesting because we'll be able to look back and say, did Microsoft pull this off with Windows in particular? Because Windows has been one of the slower moving product lines over time. For them to release something like that in a year would be pretty impressive. You know, how much time did it take Microsoft to release Windows XP Service Pack 2?
Right.
I bet it was
2 years,
right? 2 years, yeah.
Sorry. How about new hardware? Will we see 7-inch Surface? Is that possible? Other new stuff from Microsoft?
I've never heard anything personally about new hardware. I've speculated and I've given my own sort of opinion about what I would like to see. And one of those things is a 7-inch Surface tablet. Yeah, but I think they do. We all know, generally speaking, that they intend to broaden the line.
Right.
That could include anything. MP3 players, phones, 7-inch tablets, all-in-one PCs, Ultrabooks with touch. I mean, there's all kinds of areas where you can imagine that stuff going.
But one thing I have heard is from a pretty good source that there are two new Surfaces for sure coming out in 2013. What we don't know is what they are. Like, is this rumored Xbox Surface that we keep hearing about? Is it just the Surface Pro with a 4G connection? Maybe. We don't really know what they are, but supposedly at least two new tablet/PC form factors under the Surface brand are in the pipeline.
Hmm. Okay. That's interesting. How about phone? Is Apollo going to be the version for a while? Or
That's a good. Well, so what have you heard about this? Because does phone follow this same blue type schedule, where updates happen more frequently?
I think the next big rumored update to phone is codenamed Apollo Plus. It's kind of not a huge update, not like a whole new version. I don't think it's Windows Phone 9, but something like Windows Phone 8.5, maybe with a few new features thrown in. One big rumored feature was the addition of virtual private networking, which, again, this is just a rumor. We don't know. But that would be interesting to business users, for sure.
No kidding, yeah. let's see. How about server and enterprise side? Let's go to Mary Jill Foley for the enterprise update.
Yeah, we just talked about, Paul mentioned the more frequent Visual Studio updates that are coming out. And that seems to be something they're really serious about. That maybe even as often as quarterly, there could be something called Visual Studio Update 1, 2, 3, 4 coming along. And again, these aren't just service packs. These actually have new features incorporated too. So that's a really new and different model for the Visual Studio team too. It's just like Windows. They've been on like this 3-year cycle. Every 3 years, a new version of Visual Studio. So if they do pull this off, this is really big and very different for them.
Right.
So that's one thing we are expecting this year. Also, some new things with Azure. They've actually been the Windows Azure team on a really quick rollout pace. They've been adding new features almost monthly to Windows Azure. But one thing that I keep hearing might happen this year on Azure is this whole idea of Windows Azure in a box, which was something they announced back, I think it was 2010, that never actually happened. The idea was to turn Azure into an appliance that large customers, especially enterprise customers, would be interested in having on-premises. So Microsoft would actually be servicing the cloud operating system and maintaining it and all, but the actual servers would be on your own location. And they promised that back in 2010. It never really took off, but I'm hearing they're kind of investigating ways of resurrecting that idea. And that could be another big 2013 thing for the Azure team.
So in the chat room, somebody's asking about that Visual Studio, saying that, did Sanofsky not like Visual Studio? So they're saying that, is this a sign of Sanofsky's departure, that they're going to start, I guess this is Ubuntu Droid or Ubuntroid, is wondering if MSDN is getting love again, finally. Was MSDN kind of deprecated under Stephen?
Yeah.
Kind of a tough one. Somebody's saying, Studio used to get quarterly updates. C-Sharp used to get, Visual C++ was updated quarterly.
Oh, yeah? Huh. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it had to be.
I know. Yeah, there were certain languages. There were certain languages that supposedly the Windows team liked and didn't like, and they really like C++ and HTML and JavaScript, mm-hmm. and they were not as bullish about some of the other .NET languages like Visual Basic and C#. Even though they still were allowing developers to work with those, they were really trying to
C# is actually great.
C# is going to be the greatest.
It should be. It's Microsoft funny. Should put all of their eggs in that C# basket, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Maybe they will.
If you think about how Microsoft is structured, it is kind of weird where things come from, right? So in other words, you're Windows and you create Windows, obviously. So with Windows 8, you've got all these new APIs. You've got Metro and the Windows runtime. And so who makes that? Does that come from Windows or does that come from the Visual Studio or the tools team or whatever? In other words, you know, where are the responsibilities?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Do you, as Windows, go to them and say, look, we know you have expertise in this area. Here's the general list of things we're looking for. Implement this. Or do you just kind of hand it down to them? And I think there's always been a back and forth that occurs there. It's I think I have a note in here somewhere. You know, why are server and tools the same team? You know, it seems like the tools team should be attached to a core Windows team. And that's where that stuff all comes from that one place. Mm-hmm. And that client and server kind of build off of that and are separate. But that's not the way Microsoft's structured. And so I think the weirdness you see in the relationship is based around that.
Yeah. Plus, there have been a lot of documented tensions around what's called WinDev and DevDiv. So WinDev is the developer team in Windows, DevDiv is developer division in server and tools. And especially this past year, it felt like there were a lot of clashes between what those two teams wanted and who was in power, who was in charge of getting the developers on board with Windows. There was a definite clash and some very different agendas going on.
That's why Build exists, right? Remember, PDC came out of the tools group. What was it called? Mix. The Mix show, I think, started with the web folks, and then Windows Phone kind of tagged along. And, you know, both of those shows were killed for Build because Microsoft wanted to control, because Windows wanted to control its destiny. And Build is a product of the Windows division.
It's kind of ironic.
Remember that the poster with the guns.
Right.
All pointed at each other, you know, the Microsoft org chart.
Yeah, the org chart.
This is unfortunately.
I don't think it's a problem unique to Microsoft. Every company, as it succeeds and grows, has to face these challenges. And
I guess
Google does. You know, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. But you know, you don't hear about like inside of Apple people
fighting
over which language we use to write applications from one of the platforms. It's Objective C.
That's true. And that comes from the top down. Someone
smart
says,
we're done talking.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where they should listen to Anders and just say,
right,
you know, what are we betting the company on?
Right.
And I suspect his answer would be, we're betting it on C#.
Well, it comes back then to Ballmer, doesn't it? Not making those tough decisions.
Yep.
How do I pussyfoot around it? Yes.
It kind of does. Yes. Yep.
And that's probably the pitfall of having somebody who's sales focused, which he is and very good at, instead of technically focused. You know, Bill Gates would clearly have said, no, I'm sure he did. This is what it was, probably Visual Basic at the time, but
sure.
Somebody needs to say, this is it.
Yeah. One encouraging thing to me going into 2013 is if you look at what's happening in Microsoft now, it really does feel like it's now Steve Ballmer doing things differently, surrounding himself with people who are much more technical at the president level.
That's what he needs.
And maybe we're going to see the swing back a little bit more away from like all sales focused and now, you know, coming back to a little more technology focused.
Good. I mean, you got to do both. No, there's no question you got to do both, but you got to do both. You can't just do one.
No. Yep.
Did you mention Hadoop?
Hadoop. How could I not mention Hadoop?
It's awfully high in the show notes.
It is. I had to get it in there.
It's right at the top.
Yeah. So another thing I think it could happen in 2013 is Hadoop on Windows Azure could go from test status to final status. Just like the Linux virtual machine capability on Azure, it's still just considered a preview at this point. And maybe in 2013, we'll see that go final too. So good news for people who can't deploy some of these things until they're out of beta.
And I see also something, VM capabilities go final. Is that the Azure? Is that Azure?
Same. That's Azure.
Okay.
Yep.
And yeah, okay. Moving on to the business division and Office. Is it too early to say that the Office 365, Office 2013 strategy has been a hit? I think I'm excited by it. I think it's
going to be one of the biggest things.
It's one of the areas where they're firing on all cylinders still.
This year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this stuff's
going to
launch.
Yeah, so one of the very first things. Sorry. I was going to say one of the very first things this year is Office, right? The Office launch is coming up soon. We don't know where and exactly when yet, but I think Paul's heard late October, perhaps. Late January. October.
Yeah, very late
October,
January.
October, what?
It's been pushed back a little bit. Right at the end of the month.
There's a certain irony to this being an unqualified success, since there really isn't much new to do in Office, right? It's just, I guess cloud is the only thing you can really
add. It's funny. We've been saying that for a while now, but the truth is, from a very basic level, we still type words into a word processing document or whatever. But, you know, the Office team has been the source of some surprising innovations over the year, given that assumption. And, you know, the ribbon UI, I think, would be one of them, obviously, where we all sort of assume the UIs for this kinds of app, was done years ago.
Right.
And then I think moving this stuff to the cloud is also a very big deal, because people are very invested in Office in ways that, I think transcends even their investment in Windows. You know, Office today is Microsoft's single biggest business.
Right.
That could change, but I bet it doesn't. You know, I think Office is still going to be the heart of Microsoft, and because they're, you know, so productivity oriented. So right. moving this stuff to the cloud in a very effective manner is a big, big deal.
And bravo.
You know, we forgot to put this in the show notes, but there's also the very strong rumors that Office comes to iPad this year.
Yep.
And that also will have a subscription tie-in, supposedly. Like, maybe you're going to have to subscribe to an Office 365 plan to get Office, and at least four of the Office apps on your iPad. And it'll be interesting to see if people, first, if they do that. Second, if how they work around the Apple Store requirement. And third, if people buy into that, and if they're like, okay, I really need Office, and I'm going to subscribe to get it. Or if they balk and say, no, I don't want to buy Office that way. I want to buy it one time and just have it on my device.
Right.
Yep.
We don't know when, though. Have you heard May?
Yeah.
Like May-ish?
Yeah, it's later in the year. Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. But to be clear, I've not heard anything new in some time.
Me neither.
So the last I heard was a few months back, but it's not going to be on, you know, January, whatever. It will be later in the year.
And do we have pricing for Office?
That is the one thing they have not announced, right? Isn't it?
Right. Well, they've announced a few of the prices, but not all. But what's funny is that a whole slide deck with all their prices leaked last year, and it seems to be accurate. I've run it on my site, and none of them seem to be wrong, or very few of them do. So we know roughly what the price is, and what they're doing is to try to get people to buy into the subscription model. They're making that much cheaper than if you buy the product one time for one device and that's it. Like, substantially cheaper, like hundreds of dollars cheaper. So the message is, hey, we'll let you get Office cheaper if you agree to, quote unquote, rent it from us by going the subscription route.
This is a tipping point, I think, because Microsoft's strength today as we make this kind of change to cloud computing is that they can offer both, you know, on-prem and cloud services, but also a hybrid offering, right? And I think that I think what we're going to see increasingly this year is their cloud version being more powerful. That SharePoint Online part of Office 365 or Exchange Online part of Office 365 will have certain capabilities that either will come late to the on-prem version or will not come at all. And that they'll eventually just kind of, I don't want to say force people onto the cloud, but push people in that direction because it will be both better and cheaper. You know, and then eventually, in some cases, over time, you know, the on-prem stuff goes away, depending on what we're talking about. Obviously, for Office 2013, you're going to be able to buy it both ways. But, you know, it's kind of hard to justify spending $300-$400, whatever it is, for a version of Office that runs on that PC that you install it to and no more versus some low monthly amount where you can install it on up to five computers and devices. It's going to be kind of a no-brainer, unless you're really totally anti-cloud, which, you know, of course, some people are. But, I mean, financially, they're going to make it a no-brainer.
Right. Let's see. Anything else to say about Office or business?
One other thing I know a lot of people are interested in is the Yammer integration.
How much did they pay for Yammer again?
$1.2 billion.
We forget that. You know, everybody makes a big deal about Instagram. But Yammer, which is basically an enterprise Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Is it more than that?
Yeah, social networking.
A little bit more.
A little more.
Oh, okay. I know it won the TechCrunch, you know, Disrupt a couple of years back. And at the time, I didn't quite get it. It's more like an enterprise Facebook, they're saying in the chat room.
Yeah, there you go.
Great.
Well, you know what? So, by the way, it sounds dumb, but I have to say, Microsoft has actually been fairly quickly moving into this category of kind of work-related social networking services. And if you think about Facebook as the place you go to keep up with your friends and family and so forth, Yammer or technology like that could be the place you go to collaborate with people you work with on projects. And, you know, and obviously SharePoint has functionality like that built in, but it makes sense that you would need something like that in a workforce, especially in an enterprise, to find people who have certain expertise or to collaborate with the people you're already working with, or to find out more about someone because you're looking for someone that you need to work with on a project or whatever. And that stuff, you know, we sort of joke about it because Twitter and Facebook are obviously very consumer oriented services, but those types of services do make sense at work as well.
Right.
So it's sort of a new version of the virtual water cooler or whatever.
Yep. And they're getting, they're really embarking on integrating Yammer with Office, with their CRM products, with SharePoint. This year is going to be a big year for that. Starting in March of this year, they're going to be offering integrated Yammer SharePoint deals, where they're really dropping the price a lot on what people pay right now just for Yammer by itself. So if you get Yammer standalone, the basic plan, it'll be free. But then if you start integrating it with Office 365 and SharePoint Online, they're going to be deals like $4 per user per month, $8 per user per month. So they're really trying to get people to buy in who are already Yammer customers to buy into Office 365 and vice versa. Mm. And this year is going to be really big for that.
And ERP goes to the cloud.
Yep. So, yeah, a lot of people a lot of cloud skeptics tend to be ERP users because they don't want all this proprietary financial data and records and manufacturing data to be in the cloud. But there are some customers who are kind of more on the cutting edge. And for those customers, Microsoft's going to be hosting versions of some of their ERP products, specifically the NAV and the Dynamics GP products, on Azure this year, like around mid-year. So you're still going to buy those products through your partners, as you always have, and not direct from Microsoft. But you'll be, if you want to, and you're a daredevil, you can put your ERP in the cloud.
A daredevil. I've heard people go both ways on that. I mean, there's certainly advantages to putting stuff in the cloud, but there's that great fear that it's not private or secure or as we experienced before the show began, difficult to reach your data.
Oh, man.
I think these are little growing pains for cloud. I don't think that they're really an argument against the cloud. Do you?
No.
I know. I was going to say, it's funny. Some users are definitely more willing to give the cloud a try than others. Especially, right. It's funny, like the small and mid-sized business users are the ones who financially probably could benefit the most from moving
Isn't
to the
that
cloud.
Interesting, yeah.
But sure. A lot of them are very skeptical.
Right.
They're like, oh, I don't know, this cloud thing, it goes down. And then what happens? Like if I'm down for a day, I go out of business. I don't know. I hear from a lot of SMB users, like, I know I probably should look at the cloud, but I'm scared. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, and there's another issue, which is privacy, not merely reliability, but I think some people are worried about government and corporate espionage. I mean, you put stuff in the cloud, it is somewhat more accessible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and if you're in Europe, the whole Patriot Act thing and what the U.S.
Yeah.
can do.
A U.S. cloud is really scary. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
Doesn't Google handle that by having servers in Europe?
So does Microsoft.
And Microsoft does that as well.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah, there are also certain countries in Europe that have even stricter laws of their own, like Germany, and there have to be special considerations for those countries, which they have. So
right. Now, we're going to get to more. We're talking with Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, the year ahead for Microsoft. It's not just Microsoft. Let's talk about other online services that compete with Microsoft, perhaps. Shall we? When we continue.
Are there any?
I don't know. I'm hoping you guys do. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about Squarespace. Talking about the cloud. It's one thing you can't do without the cloud. That's have a website. Right? That's where the cloud began, with the web. But if you're going to have a website and you're going to rely on it, you've got to have the best hosting. That's the company that serves your website. Reliable, great uptime, real commitment to security, to availability, not to bill the heck out of you should you have a lot of traffic all of a sudden. Squarespace does all that. Squarespace is really the best hosting. And then you put on top of that their content management system. That's one of the reasons they can give you such good hosting, because it's so tightly Bound, the software that's running on Squarespace and the hosting on Squarespace, it gives them that capability. I want you to visit squarespace.com right now. You can try it absolutely free. All you have to do is go to squarespace.com and click that Get Started button. And you can, for 14 days, use it absolutely free without any credit card, without, you know, I mean, you get the full range of it. You get 24/7 support. You can, they have webinars, they have workshops, they have all sorts of stuff to make it easier for you to get started. You can even import all your existing content using their importers that use all the main website APIs. The other thing you'll get is this incredible Squarespace platform where you have mobile responsive design. You don't have to know anything about this, but you can. But your site will work beautifully. You don't have a separate mobile site. It will work beautifully no matter what size screen it's on. Everything from a 3-inch BlackBerry to a 27-inch monitor, it's going to look great. You also get if you are a developer, if you like working in HTML5 technologies like CSS3 and JavaScript, they've got a great developer platform for you too. So really, the sky's the limit. A lot of, you know, very professional services use Squarespace.com. I want you to visit Squarespace.com and try it out for 2 weeks. You don't need our offer code or anything like that. But if you decide to buy, I think you're going to like it because it's $8 for the basic plan, but then $16 for the unlimited plan. That's unlimited pages, blogs, galleries. Great if you're a photographer, an artist, a designer. The galleries are incredible. You get unlimited bandwidth. So if suddenly everything's, you know, everybody in the world's coming to your site, no problem. Not only will Squarespace support it with unlimited bandwidth, but they won't send you a bill later. I love that. And of course, unlimited storage too. And that, all of that, when you buy a year plan, it's $16 a month. Use our offer code Windows1. You can take 10% off of that. And they'll hook up your custom domain name and all that. They'll even give you free registration, custom registration. So try it right now. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code Windows1 to give it a try, and you'll get 10% off. But again, you could try. I'm sorry, that's not to give it a try. It's free to try it without any offer code. You only use Windows1 if you decide to buy and get 10% off. Squarespace.com. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking the future of Microsoft. And it says the word Google here. I don't know what that means, Paul. Explain to me. Why is Google here? Is the future of Microsoft tied in any way to Google? What? What are you laughing at? Are you giggling?
Paul's on the hot seat.
More Google attacks.
Yeah. So
you're thinking Scroogle is just the beginning? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Scroogle is just the beginning
just
of what we're going to see.
Of the Microsoft Fudberg. <Yeah.
laughs> you remember they hired Mark Penn, who was a political pollster and strategist. He worked on Hillary Clinton's
They hired
campaign,
Mark Penn. That's right.
They did.
And he was kind of a dirty tricks guy at the Bill Clinton campaign, right?
Yeah. Mark Penn's job is to attack Google, basically.
I should point out that Hillary Clinton fired him. Because he completely misran her presidential campaign. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Well, he's the guy behind Scroogle, supposedly, and some of the other more recent Google attack campaigns that we've seen. And I think that you're going to see a lot more of this going forward. Like 2013, I think we're just going to see an endless fountain of Google compete stuff. And they have to do this, I think. They have to, because Bing is kind of where it's at right now, about 30-35%. I don't see how they're really going to grow Bing unless they come at this with another tactic, the attack dog tactics.
Paul, are you muted?
Oh,
Paul is so...
No, I'm not, Leo. Why?
Never mind. Never mind.
Sorry, I have
a cold. Paul's being so quiet.
I thought this was his bit.
Sorry. I don't know how I did that.
Yeah, especially I thought you would chime in there because you love the Scroogle thing.
I think Scroogle was smart because it's true.
You are I remember during the Apple Switch campaign, it really frustrated you that Microsoft didn't take more of the initiative
right.
there.
Microsoft wasn't quick enough to respond to that. What they finally came back with was smart and way better than anything I would have come out with. But the problem I had with the Apple campaign was that a lot of the claims they made were untrue.
Right.
And I think that it's always okay to tell the truth, you know, in an ad like that when you're attacking a competitor. I mean, some people say that attacking a competitor is not the right way to advertise a product. And I actually think there are many, many ways to advertise products, and that one of the things that ads can do is raise awareness about issues that people just don't really think about.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of issues around an online service or a set of online services where privacy is just a big issue. You know, there was a thing going on today on Twitter about like what you said earlier, where Google Plus is a lot like Windows 8, where they're kind of forcing you down this path, whether you want to or not. And, you know, people fall on either side of this argument. People feel very differently about it. But, you know, in many ways, when you're an online service, it's a lot more insidious because it's just so pervasive and out there. And if you use a lot of Google services, which a lot of people do because they're most of them are free, it gives them a chance to really get their tendrils in there in ways that were never possible in PCs. I mean, you know, so many millions of PCs are sold every day, but people hit Google Web services all day long, every day on multiple kinds of devices. And
it
gives them a lot bigger chance for abuse.
Can it not be risky, though? It can backfire on you. I mean,
of course. But that's what I mean. It has to be true. In other words, the Apple stuff bothered me because there is this, and it still exists, this kind of accepted stance on the whole PC thing where the PCs always suck and Windows always sucks and everything Apple makes is always great. And people sort of nod their heads. You know, it's like when you go into a store and the person can't check you out and she says, oh, you know how computers are. You know computers.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. You also, I know how computers are. No, what do you mean? Computers should always work. What does that mean? I don't know. What do you mean? I would be more suspicious of you than the computer. Why isn't this working? You know, people need to think a little bit more about this stuff. And the Scroogle thing I think is important because it's true, you know. And people always come back with stuff. Well, Microsoft does the same thing, or the, you know, blah blah. No, whatever. The point is, Google used to have a service called Google Shopping. Now they have something that is just ads, and they call it Google Shopping, and that's something no one knows.
Right.
There, no human being uses that service and knows that.
Well, that's because nobody uses that service. Period.
Doesn't matter. You know, it was effective because it was right, because it was correct.
Yeah, I mean, and yet I think the Apple ads were effective, and you point out they weren't really.
They were very effective.
The PC getting sick from the virus, and
because they built on those perceptions that
perception, right? So it doesn't have to be true. It has to agree with existing perceptions. You know, and people, I think it also has to be handled with a light touch. You can't look like an attack dog. And I think that may be where Microsoft's going wrong a little bit. It looks a little bit.
I wouldn't put too much into the Scroogle thing. The Scroogle thing compared to the Apple ads is one ad no one has ever seen on TV versus ads that were on TV for 3 years straight. I mean, this is not. They're not even remotely.
Yeah, but Google did that. I mean, Microsoft did that. Google man reading your mail.
Gmail man. Oh, but by the way, also true.
But, you know, I mean, but wait a minute. True, but kind of reductionist true, of course, because any program, any service like Hotmail that scans for spam is reading your mail as well.
Right. So if something's going to read your mail in an automated fashion, would you rather have them doing it to protect you or to serve you ads? You know, now, who hasn't been creeped out using Gmail when you're reading about a Windows thing and there are Windows ads on the side for Windows, like actual glass Windows? It's a little creepy, and it gets a lot creepier than that. I mean, that's weird.
So you're saying Hotmail, the Hotmail ads are not contextual. They don't respond.
I am absolutely saying that because they aren't.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, they're no less effective.
Oh, they're terrible. I agree with that. They are terrible.
Right.
I happen to pay, so I don't see them.
Right.
I think that is, and I've always felt this about all these online services, that that should be an option. You know, paying to not have ads, paying to have more storage, whatever, should be an option, you know, at least. Right. The Microsoft ads are terrible, but that has nothing to do with them.
Right.
The conversation. I mean,
they agree. Are terrible. I think
they're terrible for a completely different reason.
Well, it does have something to do with the conversation because it shows you targeted ads don't necessarily make them better. Targeting ads.
Well, but you know what? By the way, there's an insidious nature to this, though. And again, I don't want to get too far from the Google thing, but you know, the Gmail ads are textual, you know, the text ads, and they're very subtle.
Right.
The problem is, like, you know, Google learns from that, and then they start putting them into search results in ways that are equally subtle. You know, there used to be an almost gentleman's agreement that we would separate ads from content in search results, and that they would at least be clearly highlighted or, you know, very different. And, you know, I think there's some weirdness there. The consent decree that just occurred today with Google involves this notion of sites will be able to opt out from having their content essentially be stolen by Google and displayed on Google sites as parts of search results. You know, you can see where this stuff goes. You know, it's not just creepy, it's kind of just wrong, you know. And at some point, it becomes a huge issue because Google stuff is just everywhere. It's just everywhere. You're going to see an ad on your phone someday that's going to have something to do with an interchange you had with a child, and you're going to be freaked by it. And that's the power of Google. It's just, there's a line that gets crossed when you have your tendrils in as many places as Google does that was never possible on the PC with Windows. It's a different thing.
Well, then it would be nice to have a choice, and that if you wanted to use Google, you could use Google if you weren't creeped out by it. And if you, what I'd love to have is an ad-free service that I pay for, and just say, "Yeah, I'm going to do all this stuff." But I understand that I'm either paying for it by looking at ads, or I'm paying for it with cold hard cash. And I think that what I would like to see is that option. Now, I don't expect Google to offer that option, but Microsoft could. Does it?
Does it offer hardcore cash?
If you give me cash, if I give you cash, Microsoft.
Oh, I see.
Can I have a completely ad-free experience? Yes, right.
Yeah.
Not on
Bing. Right? Hotmail. Right?
Hotmail does.
I thought on Hotmail.
Hotmail.
I would love to see it on Search too.
Yeah, I would too. By the way, and you know, maybe God knows Microsoft loves subscription services. I mean, maybe this is where this all heads. You have some master Microsoft account. And you can
let's have a choice. You know, let's have a choice. Then the argument kind of goes away. Google should be very upfront and say, look, you're paying for this with your attention. We use your information to target ads at you. That's how you pay for our services. You know, be very clear about that.
Absolutely.
And Microsoft should say, and good, give us $6 a month and you'll never have to see another ad. And
the problem,
the ad-free web.
I think the problem, though, is like Microsoft Online Services Division, it's not just Bing and Search. The other part of that division is Microsoft Advertising. And what fuels the advertising division is search, and search is fueled by ads. So if they suddenly let you cut out the ads, it's like, wait, what are you guys doing? Like, we're trying to run a business here selling ads online through Microsoft Advertising. So I think that's why, and on Google too, I think that's why you won't see that probably
happen.
It's
just a thought.
I know. It's a nice thought. It's an interesting
Well, I'm just
thought.
Saying that's one way to say, here's how we're different. The problem is it's a little muddier because it isn't. You can do Scroogled and Gmail, man, but then you're still serving me ads. So
it's also a digital divide issue too. I mean, so
what
we've just created is a world where the rich people can see no ads and the poor people will be pummeled by ads.
Well,
you know,
no, I think that's great. Here's another way to look at it. You still can get the great, wonderful stuff of the web for free if you've got no money, but you're going to see some ads. Everything costs something.
Sure.
I can't feed you every day for the next 5 years for free. You're going to have to pay one way or the other. I think it's great that there is a free option that includes looking at ads. And then if you don't want to see ads or you're worried about privacy, $6 a month or something. JC Calhoun saying, Leo says, I think it's great if poor people see ads. I'm not saying
that.
I'm saying if you can't afford the net, we don't live in a world where if you can't afford the net, one will be provided for you.
I've experienced this phenomenon before, but the internet is literal.
I know.
So
I know the literal net strikes. No, I think everybody understands what I'm saying, and I think that that's a good thing, and that's a good way to contextualize it. But obviously, very few people are willing to give up the idea of having ad revenue, if anybody.
Sure.
Now, I've built my business on it's all free and you watch ads and that's how it works.
Yep.
And I'm not apologetic for that. I would love to charge you for it, but my experience has been nobody will pay for it. So we do.
I wonder what the math is on what the price point is. You know, so somebody just listens to Windows Weekly.
Well, I'll tell you what we tried when we first started. And I think you were part of this experiment.
Okay.
We said it's free. But if you'd like us to continue with, you know, the public broadcast model, we'd love you to give us some money. We ask $2 a month.
I would give anything to wear tails and stand there with Iaz and try to get people to give us money once
well,
a year.
And that was something I refused to do, and perhaps that's why it didn't work as well. Although public broadcasting reports a 4% donor rate. We were getting about 2% donor rate. So for an additional 2%, I wasn't willing to interrupt programming for an hour every 3 weeks and say, give me money. To me, that's more offensive than just running an ad every once in a while. In any event, it didn't work.
By the way, these are all different content types, too. I mean,
yeah, so. I think media people are used to free ad-supported media. Admittedly, there's HBO, and you pay money for that. But that's a little bit higher quality content than this fabulous show.
Well, by the way, it's also a much smaller audience, not than this show, but I mean than traditional TV. In other words, what it's competing with is much bigger than what it is. And so, you know, you can charge, you're guaranteeing yourself a smaller audience.
Yeah. Anyway, it works. What we're doing works. I would love to see somebody say, you want an ad-free experience, we'll give you all the value of Google, but you pay us, and I don't know what that would cost. I would suspect, look at, ads don't make that much money. Banner ads, click ads on search, they're not making Google, you know.
I know that by this point, Mary Jo is wondering how her life has careened so wildly off.
In which case, we should move on to big data.
I feel the need to apologize.
Big data.
That's okay. Now, the advertising conversation is interesting because it's something people love to hate. But it's if you look at why did Microsoft and Google get into this business, it's tied back to ads.
Right. They've built a bit, you know, and that's always the case. When you build a business on a certain model, it's very hard to change that model. Yep. I understand that.
It is.
But then it kind of, to me, slightly offensive to slam the other guy for it.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, they are competing.
Yeah.
You know,
but from the point of view, most users are doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's just exactly like politics to me, Microsoft and Google.
Right.
They're both the same company in a way, but you can pick who you want to be the Democrats and Republicans.
That's actually
same
a
kind of
very
ad,
good
same
point.
Kind of everything. You know, yeah. It's like they both do bad things. Yeah. Okay.
What was that? What was
my
that
oversimplified
saying?
View of the world?
The something of small differences. The smaller the difference, the bigger the deal, it seems to be.
Sure. Yep.
Big data.
You know, so the other thing besides just attacking Google that I think we're going to see in 2013 from the online services team is I think you're going to see them justify their existence more and kind of explain to people in an indirect or maybe in a direct way why they keep losing all this money in online services and why it's worth it.
It's a lot of, like $70 million a quarter or something, right?
It's some gigantic hundreds of millions of dollars a quarter, I think. Yeah. And the losses are getting smaller, but they're still, whenever you look at Microsoft's earnings, it's always like, yep, and online services, they're losing money and they're still. But, you know,
counterbalance to the rest of the good news.
Yeah, yeah. I think what they're going to do, though, to offset that this year is you're going to hear them talk about things that they're doing in online services that affect other divisions at the company. So they're doing a lot of work in speech, actually, in the online services division. Like all the Tell Me assets that Microsoft did sell off last year, they're in the online services division, which is kind of a weird place for them. But that they're doing a lot of research and a lot of product development around using speech in search. Like Siri, but beyond that too, like going way beyond that with natural language processing and search and all that. That's all being done inside the Bing team. And I think you're going to hear them talk a lot more about big data too and all of the ways that the learnings that they've come up with in the Bing team just by having these giant indices of search results are being used in other parts of the company. Like in SQL Server and other places to improve products there. So I think you're going to hear them talk about that a lot more this year and explain why it's worth them continuing to lose all this money in online.
Why?
Because they can get other benefits through all these other things they're doing on the side. You know, another example.
It's not a loss.
We make it up in volume.
That's what they're going to say. Yeah. That's what they're going to say. And, you know, there's a part of the Bing team that developed some of the nicest apps for Windows 8, for example, like the weather app and the travel app and You know, they're going to talk about them more, I think, and say, hey, see, we don't just do search. We also develop apps. And this is part of the mission of online services at Microsoft, too. So I think you're going to hear a lot of that kind of messaging in this year.
I guess the other way to look at it is, how much money would Microsoft have lost, if you will, if they weren't involved in this? You know, what, like, what opportunities would have passed them by?
What's the opportunity cost? That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
I mean, what does it cost Microsoft for Google to be really successful?
Right.
Potentially, that could be a lot more than the tens of millions of dollars they're losing a quarter. I mean, it, in the context of Microsoft's earnings, that's really not that much.
Right. That's a good way to look at it.
Yep.
I'm really making lemonade here. I'm just...
You have to do it. They've got to do it. They've got no choice.
Yeah.
So, we talked earlier about Skype. This was before the show began. When I was positing that perhaps Mike, Skype is not... It's now, I don't think that they actually... Okay, I'm going to tell you the truth, because I'd like to say flippantly, oh, sure, Skype's gotten worse since Microsoft bought them. I don't think it's Microsoft's fault. I think the internet is congested as hell. But I would love to see Microsoft put some resources...
I am certainly congested.
I would love to see Microsoft put some resources into Skype. We rely... We live on Skype. You guys are on Skype right now. Most of our hosts join us via Skype.
I am really nervous about Skype because I do rely on it and I use it. But I also... I use Messenger because there's a handful of people like Mary Jo Foley and Rafael Rivera that I converse with fairly regularly over that. That
do you use it for text or audio or
mostly
video?
Text.
Yeah, see, that's the difference. I mean, I don't care if Skype's a good text.
Well, except for they're getting rid of Messenger and they're replacing it with Skype. And so Skype very clearly has to evolve into something that is very good at a bunch of different things.
It does have chat. It's always had chat and it's always had good
chat. But it's so awful. The other thing this is such a dumb thing, but people will ping me through Skype. I actually don't know how they're doing it. Like, in other words, I don't know if they're doing it. Well, let me explain that. I mean, in other words, because I've integrated all this stuff together, I don't know. For all I know, someone is hitting me on Facebook, and for some reason it's coming through Skype. Right. I have no idea where they're seeing me from. But, you know, Skype makes these – even the sounds that Skype makes are terrible. I hate it so much, you know, and yet I rely on it. And so it's frustrating to me that these two communication tools that I use all day, every day – are both incredibly frustrating to me. And I hope that, you know, they're going with Skype, and so there you go. I hope they fix it. I really do. And maybe they could look to Link for the example of how that kind of client can be done right and how it can look right and function right. And
Link is the existing Microsoft tool.
Enterprise tool.
They're keeping that, though, right? That's not going away.
I think so. I think I have a note in here. Let me see if I have it in here. Yeah, I said... in the products we wish would launch next year, you know, one of my suggestions would be consolidate similar products. And the example I use is Skype and Link, you know, that maybe Skype and Link need to be the same thing because they kind of are the same thing, aren't they? Ultimately.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do it, but they're definitely going to federate Link and Skype.
Would they call it
like
Skink?
For real.
Skink?
Yeah.
No, it's Leo. Come on. It's Sklink.
Sklink. I'm sorry.
Jeez.
Yeah, with Link, with the new Link, that 2013 Link, the Skype Federation is finally starting to really and truly happen. So I think they're going to keep them separate products. And Microsoft always says Link is for working with people inside your firewall and Skype is for people outside your firewall, if you think about it as a business. So I think they still see them as two distinct things that they want to keep separate but integrated.
Sklink.
Stink. I want to use stink.
Oh, boy.
Dude.
Don't give him any naming ideas. No. You know that.
I like skink.
Awesome. I do too.
S-K-I-N-C, right? Because link is L-I-N-C.
L-Y-N-C.
L-Y-N-C, right.
Yeah. Sklink is better.
Sklink. Sklink. Is there any Xbox? What are your Xbox predictions? Some said we would see an Xbox 720 at E3 in June.
I think that's pretty clear. Other than this, Mary Jo, I don't know if you saw this, but Microsoft
or cared
a statement. Well, of course she cares.
I care. I
Mary Jo will be an Xbox. But my resolution is Mary Jo will be an Xbox user by the end of this year. So
for TV, not for gaming,
for whatever. So, look at her.
She's going to be a Skyrim fanatic before this is done.
Well, okay, let's not get crazy.
Dovahkiin! Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
there is beer in Skyrim. Has,
opinions about what, whether it's better to be a dwarf mage or a
that's elf what warrior. I want to hear.
The saddest day of my life. But anyway, so Major Nelson put a countdown clock on his blog to E3. And so, of course, a lot of people think, and probably correctly, that this is going to be where they announce the 720 or the next Xbox. But Microsoft issued a statement about this when asked, and it was very vague. And it alluded to the notion of, we are always looking for ways, and they didn't say it this way, but to stretch out our investment and break the bounds of what's possible with the current generation of consoles. I mean, can you imagine if E3 came and went and what they announced was like Kinect 2.0 and we're going to have another Christmas with the 360. Can you imagine how disappointing that would be?
I think they're going to. No. I think they're partially going to do that. I think I'm not convinced at E3 they're going to announce the 720. I'm not. Because if you think about what they're doing more and more at Microsoft, they're trying to be Apple, right? So what would Apple do if they were doing this? They'd have a separate event.
Oh, yes, and they would.
Right? And so at E3, I bet we might hear about Xbox Surface or something new with smart glass, maybe some Kinect stuff. And hints that, hey, guess what? This November or October, there might be something else in your stockings.
Better to do it then. You're right.
Yeah,
I think that's what's
happening. You lose steam.
The way that their statement was so off-putting to me.
It was.
That it made me for the first time doubt that this next Xbox was going to happen right then.
I think it's definitely, next Xbox is 2013. I'm almost certain. Remember that roadmap that leaked last year that that they had their lawyers do cease and desist on and takedowns. And I think that roadmap was right. And that pointed to Xbox 720 in 2013, but in late 2013, I believe, not E3 time.
Well, E3, I mean, obviously it would just be an announcement.
It would just be a showing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. I still think if they were smart. Yeah. They got to keep selling the 360 this year, right? So
they did this over time. I mean, I went out and visited them early in the year. And so they had announced it. It was that thing that the actor that played Frodo in The Lord of the Rings was at the event.
Elijah Wood
showed up at the launch event, which was in probably February or something. Or maybe it was related to CES. I don't remember. But it was, they did it over time. For them, if they were to announce the next Xbox at E3 and then ship it right then, right that holiday season, that would be a pretty quick transition. A lot like Nintendo did something like we shut off the Wii 1 year and then it came out the Christmas the following year.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. So this has raised a lot of questions. I mean, you put this countdown clock up, it's like it's all of a sudden the whole world's falling apart.
Look, Larry, I mean, it's all for him. It's about games and E3. And I mean, it doesn't mean that he's not that there's.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, right. So in other words, he literally could have meant just, E3 is the next big event in our industry. Why wouldn't I be excited about this?
I bet you that's what he's saying right now as he's talking back to the radio. You guys.
I don't know why everyone's getting so excited.
What are you so excited about? It's just another thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. So that's interesting.
I was a little disappointed because I bought for Christmas for a young fella. Mm-hmm. I bought an Xbox and a Kinect, and I thought, gosh, this has been out for a while. There ought to be a newer Kinect.
I know.
Didn't they announce Kinect for business or something? I mean,
a year ago this week, they announced it for Windows.
So what the heck?
But this is not a retail release that normal people buy and there are Kinect games for Windows. There are none.
Right.
This was a developer-only release. Very strange. They've updated the software a bunch of times, but it is very much it's an experiment, basically. And that is a slightly improved version of the Kinect that shipped with the Xbox.
Oh,
the one you get with 360 today is still the old, 1.0 version.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you don't live in a McMansion, good luck.
Yeah, because you got to stand way back. I know. I can't really do it in my place.
I can't do it at all in mine.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating.
Yep.
Any other gaming? How about smart glass? Whatever happened to smart glass?
Well, it's still there.
It's still there. Good.
In fact, I was writing something about
thriving?
That.
Is it thriving?
Well, no, it's a little harder to explain than that. I mean, it's really just kind of an integration feature. Right. It's a way to
you have it, you just don't know it.
Tablet. Well, you know, like everything else Microsoft does, it's subtle and it works better in some places than in others. So, for example, you could rent or buy a movie on Xbox Video on the Xbox that has some kind of Xbox Smart Glass integration. And if so, with your Windows 8 or RT tablet or your Windows phone, you can have information about the movie coming up in the mobile app simultaneous with the movie. Which is, you know, pretty useful. It's one of those things, you know, you watch a movie and you're like, who is that guy? He looks awfully familiar. And he'll be there in the app and you can see what other movies he's been in and, you know, it kind of answers that little bit of trivia that you might have about the guy.
Yeah, Amazon has that. It's called X-Ray.
Right, but yeah. Amazon X-Ray works on
a Kindle device. Yeah.
Well, on the device. In other words, you're watching the movie.
Right.
You tap the screen and it brings up an interface. Right. This is, you're watching the movie on the big screen on a different device. And the information about the movie and the characters in it and the actors is on a different device. And so that's the point of Smart Glass. It's still there. That's not the only point, I should say. It's also a remote control of sorts. You could be watching a movie on your Surface tablet, walk into your living room, play it on the Xbox. Assuming it meets all kinds of conditions, because this is not something that just works with everything. But continue watching it on the Xbox. You can do stuff like that. You can do the same thing with music. You can start a music playlist playing on your Surface or on your phone and have it pushed up to the Xbox and then control it from your Surface or phone.
So, and Mary Jo, in her note, talks a little bit about this. There is a move to kind of integrate all this stuff throughout Microsoft and more of a consumer push for everything. You say Windows Phone is going to be become a Windows SKU.
I say it should.
Should.
Windows SKU.
Okay. Yeah. But what we're really saying is kind of isn't this just the Apple ecosystem version, Microsoft's version of that? Everything is an ecosystem now, part of a larger ecosystem. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know,
it's working. I mean, everybody wants to do that. It's working very well for Apple. That gives them an entree into other areas, you know, and then they could go to the cable companies and say, look, we have built an ecosystem. We would like you to participate.
And, Apple's experience is a lot more seamless than Microsoft's. On the other hand, I don't believe that Apple has anything like Smart Glass. So, for example, I mean, obviously they have AirPlay. I don't mean the play content from here to there aspect of it. I mean the integration stuff. You know, there's stuff coming, and maybe there's some of this stuff out now, where you can be playing a game on the Xbox 360 and then on your tablet or phone have a second screen, which is, in fact, a separate running app.
Right.
Hitting the same online services, doing different things.
I think they're relying more on third parties for stuff like that, frankly.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, it's just there are additional capabilities to Smart Glass that put it well above what Apple offers. But in typical Microsoft fashion, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. It depends on what you're doing. You know, you may rent some movie that has absolutely nothing. And so there's nothing you can really do with it through Smart Glass. You may rent one that has an incredible experience, you know. The Apple stuff,
they're very dependent on the content companies developing the content for Smart Glass, right? Like, they have to wait
it's
for them to do this.
Just a platform for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Apple hasn't really provided a platform, but they do have people doing that kind of thing. There's HBO, I think, does something similar. Yeah. I can't remember.
The other thing... about ecosystems too, though, is I think 2012 for Microsoft was a year when they tried to get their ecosystems more aligned, you know, their developer platforms more aligned, having the common kernel in Windows Phone and Windows, and it was very much a transition year for them. And I think 2013 is going to be the year where we start to see what that really meant for them to make all those really deep changes. And if it pays off in terms of more developers coming to the platform and making things more seamless for people developing across the different platforms, that's what they wanted to have happen. Right. And I think 2012 was just a start, right?
They also, they really got to spend a good portion of this year filling in the gaps, you know, getting it right. Windows Blue, I think, is a step in that direction for Windows. I called out Xbox Music in the notes because I've been writing about Xbox Music. These are things that are so full of promise and yet fall apart so quickly when you look deeply at them that it is astonishing how bad they can be and how frustrating they can be. There are things like, you know, it's so hard to explain, but if I could, maybe a simple example would be you can create a playlist in Windows 8 or Windows RT or Windows Phone or the Xbox 360. And then that playlist will sync into the cloud, your cloud, and will be made available on all these other devices. Now, in Apple's ecosystem, that works flawlessly. If you have iTunes Match, you pay for that. It's $25 a year, but it works flawlessly. It works flawlessly because Apple does things very simply. They don't have a subscription service. They just have your music in the cloud matched to their collection, and if they don't have it, they put your music there.
Right.
The Microsoft one is so much more stuff going on. They have a subscription service in addition to offering music for sale. And they'll match your music to that cloud and put it up in the cloud. So you could actually make a playlist on the, I'll just make this up, on the Xbox 360, populate it with music from Microsoft's cloud service, sync it, and it will work. But you could make one in your PC that is only has music from your collection that isn't in the cloud, and that playlist will sync with nothing in it to all of your other devices because that
cool.
stuff isn't in their cloud.
Right.
And it's like, it is so dumb, and it is so typically Microsoft. I hate to say it, but I mean, it's just so, it's so typical of them to do something like that. And there's no message anywhere that explains, oh, by the way, this thing you made is going to look like crap on your Xbox. Have fun with that. You know, it just does it. And you have to really spend time sorting out what's wrong with it. You know, a lot of frustration there. I bet if you spent time in the Microsoft support forums on anyone, God forbid, that has actually tried to use Xbox Music on Windows 8 or RT or the 360 or Windows Phone 8, it is a fairly horrific experience. And so it's something that needs to be fixed.
Good.
It feels like an alpha. It doesn't even feel like a beta.
I can't. The deeper I get into it, it's like it is.
Yeah.
It is this rabbit hole that you can't get out of. It's crazy. By the way, consider the permutations. Some aspects of this. It's not fair to call it Xbox Music a service. Xbox is a matrix of services. It is many services. On the Xbox 360, you need an Xbox Live Gold account to do anything, for starters. And you need an Xbox Music Pass to do almost anything. Actually, let's just say anything with Xbox Music. But you could imagine someone has both of those things, and so they're paying a lot. You can imagine someone who has neither one of those things. You can also imagine someone who has Xbox Music Pass but not Xbox Live Gold. And while it's hard to imagine, I have to test it, there might be people who have... No, actually, that's not hard to imagine. People who would have Xbox Live but not have Xbox Music Pass. So... how does this all work?
Yeah.
Differently. It works differently. And it works
and
differently
if you have a
on
Zoom.
No, you don't have a Zoom.
Don't go there,
baby. We're not talking about Zoom.
No Zooms.
I know. That just makes it crazy. I have a Zoom. I have all of those.
No, you don't. Be quiet. You don't have
I do. And it's just like unbelievable.
I can't help you.
I look at my system. I'm like, which one can sync with this? Which one can't? No,
I'm sorry. That service has been deprecated. You need to throw that away now.
Yeah, no. So, the reason it's awful, it's worse than we're even alluding to, is because, you know, if you use a Zune, that means you use the Zune the Zune PC application to sync. Yeah. You actually get like capabilities there that you don't get in Xbox Music. It's fucking nuts, is what it is. It's unbelievable how bad it is. I don't understand. It is the exorcist of music services. It doesn't make any sense. I can't keep it in my head. I don't understand it.
I love it. Paul swears once in the entire year, and that's what he swears about.
It's nuts.
I love it.
I'm sorry for that.
No, please don't apologize. Because you say it so rarely, it gives it more oomph.
Since my private hell, I don't.
Yeah, I can tell now. It's hurting you. It's deeply, it's crazy. Disturbing.
It's crazy. It's like it's crazy in the way that Visual Basic used to be crazy. You know, back in the early days before .NET, you know, the Visual Basic was a horrible, horrible programming language. It's just terribly made, and it's the type of thing where if you know anything about anything, or if you're just logical and have common sense, you could look at code and say, "Well, this will be doing that," and then you run it and it does something completely different. And Xbox Music is that experience again. It's like, okay, well. Let's see. I have an Xbox Music Pass, and I have this, and so this will be what happens. And then you look at it, and it's like, nope, that's not what happens.
Yep, didn't happen.
That's crazy.
Not gonna do it. Well, I think we've now gotten into our wish list. our
yes, we have
what we would like to see in 2013 from Microsoft.
What would we like to see?
Well, I don't know. You tell me, Paul. You say Microsoft has too many businesses. We kind of touched on this a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to see this stuff consolidated down. I mean, I mentioned server tools maybe don't need to be the same thing. Although I like the notion of there being a Windows Core and tools together. I think that makes more sense than server and tools personally. But, you know, Windows Phone should be part of Windows. And I think that Skype should be part of. I bet a key provision of the Skype purchase was that Microsoft guaranteed they would be a separate division of Windows.
Yeah.
And be a separate division of Microsoft.
Yeah.
And would be treated semi-autonomously, you know, for X number of years or something.
I have to think that's what happened because that doesn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah. It makes no. If you look at their business lineup, their, you know, the businesses they have, Skype is one.
Right.
And it makes no sense.
Well, why is it a standalone business? Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Yeah.
To me. But
I think it was because they supposedly were going to work with every division, right? They were going to work with Xbox and Office and all the divisions.
Yeah, that's freaking great.
But you know, maybe
to work
if,
on that
if
there.
Maybe if Microsoft really does reorg early this year, like everybody's hearing and predicting, maybe we'll see where Skype ends up. That could be interesting.
Yeah. Well, that consolidation thing is part of that too. I mean, I think yeah. Skype link, you know, together makes sense, and thus, off they make sense as part of Office. To me.
I like your Clover Trail one, though. You're on your wish list, Paul.
Did you see, what's that guy's name? Hal Berenson?
So we should tell people what. Clover Trail-based Surface tablets to replace Surface RT and Surface.
Oh, Paul's been whining about that for years.
That would be, that would be awesome. But that's not what the first Surface Pro is going to be.
Clover Trail is an Intel chipset that has what features that you want? Why is what they're doing not?
So Clover Trail is better performance in ARM, just as good battery life, if not better. So, and it has all the advanced power states that ARM offers. So it's basically, it gives you, it's the system on a chip, so tiny, thin, small devices, just as good as ARM, completely backwards compatible with all the software.
It's Intel's response to ARM.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yep.
And why Microsoft didn't, well, I guess they couldn't wait, but you're not saying Surface Pro, you're saying Surface RT or both?
Right.
RT. Yeah.
See, obviously.
Well, why wouldn't they do that? That sounds like a perfect idea. No?
I don't know, actually. I mean, I you know, having now used the Surface RT and having used the Clover Trail tablet, I really don't know. I don't understand why they went with ARM at all. I really don't get it.
I think they just did because Intel wasn't ready.
Yeah,
right?
it was got to be timing.
But how amazing is it that Windows has been architected for and optimized for x86 chipsets for decades. And so somehow between Windows 7 and Windows 8, an ARM version of Windows was going to be ready faster than an Intel version. Like, that's amazing.
No, but they were working on the ARM version a long time ago. Remember
I agree with you. I'm not testing what you said. I'm just amazed that that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't understand. Microsoft, and I imagine there are golf matches or something where they go out and they talk and, hey, by the way, I don't know if you noticed there, Paul Ottolini, but the world's changing. You know, maybe we should make some devices. What do you think? Let's just make these big power hungry chip. No one cares. You know, like, it's really, I mean, does that really happen? I don't know. So that's I am amazed that we have ARM based systems to deal with today. I'm amazed by this. They're so constrained.
Right.
Now, this will change, obviously. You know, Clover Trail systems are constrained too, by the way. I mean, these things can only have 2 gigs of RAM, a 32-bit architecture. They're not perfect. But, you know, again, compared to RT, these things represent what used to be the netbook part of the market, essentially. And there's one big difference, though, between a Clover Trail tablet and a Surface RT tablet and a netbook, and that's like $300. They're $300 more expensive than those netbooks were. Like, I don't understand. It's almost like this was a scheme to raise the bottom line on the PC market, where I think the netbook came along and kind of, you know, it like kicked the knees out on the PC market by being so cheap. And it's almost like this is their attempt. I wonder if it doesn't have to do with the economics of the situation rather than the technology.
So you think there won't be a Clover Trail Surface RT?
Surface. Well, I don't know. You know, if you have, I have my own wish list of what I'd like to see on the Surface.
Yeah.
But if you accept, you know, whatever, they have a Surface RT that's a low-end version. They have a Surface Pro. A Clover Trail Surface would kind of muddy the waters unless you were getting rid of the Surface RT or using the ARM-based version of Windows, you know, Windows RT, as the basis for that, the Xbox right. Surface that that people have thrown around the notion of. Maybe a 7-inch entertainment tablet, which would be fine for ebook reading, for movies, for games.
Right.
This is just speculation, though. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Xbox Surface? I see those two words together. That's interesting. Yeah. A touch Xbox?
Xbox Surface rumor. But then the other thing that we wonder, will this happen? Because this is another rumor, Surface Phone, right? Everybody keeps saying, will Microsoft make their own phone? And, I didn't think they should, because I actually thought... HTC especially, and also Nokia, were doing some nice phones these days. But Nokia, we're not getting any traction in the market. Like, it's still, I say we, because we're the 3%, as I always joke. We Windows phone users. Still 3% or so. And maybe Microsoft's going to do it just for the same reason that they did the Surface PC tablet. And they're going to say, hey, we're going to set the bar, and we want you guys to get up there to this bar. I don't know. I could see them doing it, and I can see them not doing it. I'm kind of on the fence about whether they might.
I think they've stepped over the line, and they have to do it. I think when you have retail stores and you have Surface, you just got to do it all. In fact, this maybe should have been in my predictions here is, you know, maybe not this year, but I think the future of Microsoft is, on the consumer side especially, is very Apple-like in the sense that they are going to have more control over the destiny. And that as all of these electronic retailers are disappearing off the face of the earth, Circuit City, CompUSA, Best Buy, possibly next, they've obviously been having financial problems. You know, the Microsoft store may become the place where you go to look at PCs and pick one and buy one. And Microsoft will offer other PCs, of course, from other companies. But that creates a very different situation than the world of today. If you ever go into a Best Buy, you know how awful the PC section in there is. Terrible. It's like it looks like Stalingrad at the end of World War II, you know. So Microsoft can give you an Apple-like experience. But on the flip side, the part I think people don't really think too much about is they can also now enforce restrictions on PC makers, which they're not able to restrict today with traditional versions of Windows, where they can say, hey, look, you can put whatever crap you want on a PC. But if you're going to sell it at our store, it has to be like this. And that creates a better experience overall for users. And we might get into some weird territory down the line where those guys, at least not electronically, but for physical retail stores, that may be their best option to go through Microsoft, which is a weird, kind of a weird about face, you know, to the way things have been. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, how that turns out. But I really do think that when Microsoft says we're a devices and services company, you take them at their word. I don't see how they don't make a Windows phone device. I don't see how that's possible for them not to do that. They have to be planning it. They have to be.
Do you have some tech resolutions for the year you'd like to share? Besides drinking more beer?
No, these are tech resolutions.
Tech resolutions. Well, there's some technology in
Mary Jo's tech resolution will involve a stomach pump technology that will save her life at some point.
Nice. Yeah, should I go first?
You go, Mary Jo.
Okay. So one thing I want to do more of this year is try to find some apps, both for my Windows RT tablet, which is my Surface RT, and my Windows Phone 8 that I like. I have so few apps installed on either device. I go into the store almost every day and I'm like, is there anything I want, anything at all? And I'm telling you, I have like maybe 12 apps installed on my Surface RT and maybe the same number installed on my Windows Phone 8. So I'm kind of on the fence. Is it me or the apps? I think it's the apps, but it also might be me. So I'm trying to be more open-minded.
It's the apps.
Try to be more open-minded. And then my other resolution is I hope this year I can find a Windows 8 laptop that I think is worth buying. Because so far I have been really underwhelmed with what's out there. And have not seen a single one I'm interested in. And I'm hoping 2013 will bring some miraculous form factor that I'm going to say, okay, I'm ready to buy.
Interesting.
I like it.
I like it. How about you, Mr. Paul?
So this zero data is a bad name for this, but I've come up with this kind of a goal. In fact, I guess we're probably 2 hours over time here, but
fill it up.
Well, no, it kind of dates back to a conversation I had with Mary Jo, actually. We were in Vegas, I think, at the time and on part of our trips, and she was telling me that she lives in it, and again, this is okay, right? I just want to make sure.
You could tell.
Mary Jo lives in a small apartment in New York City, and she has this kind of, when she moved there, she only came with a very small amount of stuff, and she doesn't have a lot of space. And so when she buys something, it's a fairly serious decision. So when she, when something comes into her home, something has to go as well.
That's small.
And I really kind of like this theory. So
no, it's good. So you don't get cluttered that way.
But
have room.
It touched off something that my wife and I have talked about a lot, which is this notion for the future where we do home swaps, for example, and people come into your home and you can't have stuff all over the place. Your home has to be clean and, the less stuff you have on hand, the better for that kind of stuff. And I think the way technology has gone is that we've gotten to the point where we don't need as much stuff anymore. I've always had multiple computers, multiple servers. I at one point had a rack-mounted server in my cellar, if you can believe that. I've always had multiple hardware devices. But, the way technology has gone, not just, virtualization, which helps a lot, or, cloud computing, but all of this stuff together combined means that your footprint can be a lot smaller.
Right.
And my goal for this year is to reduce my local data footprint, meaning I want to put more and more stuff into the cloud, but I want to do it in ways that are intelligent. I have data on my home server today dating back to probably 1993 or so, work-related data. I have an incredible archives of stuff, which are all the more incredible when you realize that I never access that data ever. Right. And so it could be in a place that is not readily accessible all the time. It doesn't have to be something that I can access all the time. So I'm sort of researching it across the board. But if you think about, documents and work-related data, photographs, movies, music, and so forth, I want to be more aggressive about getting that stuff, into the cloud. And it corresponds nicely with the way that mobile devices have gone. Mary Jo's talking about her Surface RT. Surface RT has 32 gig or 64 gigs of storage. That's it. My music collection does not fit on this device. But we live in a different age now. I don't need my music collection to fit on that device. I used to travel with my entire music collection. I can't tell you why I did that. But, before I went on a trip, I would copy over some selection of movies. I would copy over some archive of documents. I would copy over my music collection. Because, God forbid, I'm not entertained every second of the day or whatever. But, it's a different world. And at least here in the United States, at least in my situation, I have pervasive broadband connectivity at all times. I have two smartphones that have tethering on them. I have all kinds of ways to get online at all times. And I it's kind of a way of, as part of a broader resolution about, cleaning the house, but getting rid of stuff, I guess would be the way I would say it, is getting rid of virtual stuff as well.
You're very trendy. The Steve Case wrote an article, blog post.
AOL Steve Case?
Yeah. Because he's a venture capitalist now, of course.
He's still a thing?
He's still a thing. and he, what he invests in is shared stuff. So Zipcar, it came up because Zipcar sold for $500 million to Avis. Airbnb is another example where, and we talked a lot about this on This Week in Google yesterday, the idea of not owning a car, not owning stuff. Because apparently the trend
I told Mary Jo this. I said this is very anti-American.
It is because
very anti-American.
Yeah, it's been let's acquire
Not a car but cars, a multi-car garage, and our homes all fill up with as much stuff as the space will allow. It's a battle. And of course, I review devices, and I have devices, you know, piling up in the corner. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, but I think you're kind of, this is the new modern thing. And you're right, it is very un-American. So I don't know
it's extremely un-American.
How well it's
going to take
off.
But I would love to live someday in the future, you know, live in a place where I don't need a car.
I think we're getting there. I think a lot of us feel like we don't need so much stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff,
you know. I haven't driven in 13 years.
Yeah, guys. Mary Jo, you're a good example of this. You're the modern person.
Oh, she was the inspiration for this. Mary Jo, you are my inspiration.
I am.
You're the wind beneath our wings, Mary Jo Foley.
I'm going to break out into song.
No.
Have I ever told you you're my hero? All right. Moving along before we get all maudlin and start crying.
I love you so much.
We're running out of time. Do you want to? What would you like to talk about? What would you like to talk about? What are you interested in?
Should we do our
I think
picks?
We should save the Windows 8 stuff through for
okay.
next time.
And there is a short note that Steven Sinofsky is back, baby.
Yeah, he's blogging. He's back to blogging.
And how many words?
There's been a hole in my life since he left. So
seven.
Super short. This was a short post.
It's 7,000 words, isn't it? Oh, no, it's not.
No, okay. I said way under 7,000 words.
And yeah.
He says he wants to be more brief going forward and also less snark, which is a good goal for all of us.
He's, you know what? I think he's been chastened.
People don't change, Leo.
The chasen Steven Sinofsky.
His blog, if you guys haven't found it already, it's blog.learningbyshipping.com. Ooh. And the implication is there's lots of lessons to be learned from shipping products, which I think everybody at Microsoft would agree.
Yeah. That's not a dig in any way.
Nope. No. I didn't take that name as a dig.
No, I actually thought
shipping is a feature, as they like to say these days.
Absolutely.
Steve Jobs said that. Great artists talk about stuff. Ship. Yeah. He told the Macintosh team that back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. He says it's fine to be in love with what you're doing, but it's nothing unless you ship something.
Right.
I think that's a valuable lesson. For a lot of programmers and engineers and designers, a lot of us in the tech industry are perfectionists and want to tweak. No blogger is like that. So you guys, you're off the hook.
Opposite.
Or book author. All right, let's get to our picks. Your tip of the week, Mr. Thurrott.
This is the tip of the week is, in Windows 8 and in Windows Phone as well, you know, one of the big conundrums we have is that there are apparently no apps, you know. But I often find that the apps that I want to use are excellent on the web. And when you think about a Windows RT tablet or a Windows 8 tablet or device or whatever, you know, the normal web version of a service is, in fact, often the best one to use on that device. And so I use Facebook as the example for that. A lot of people, myself included, have complained about the fact that there's no native Facebook app for Windows 8, which there isn't. But, you know, they have the people integration. It's fine. But, you know, if you want to keep up with what's going on Facebook, and I don't mean like keep up with your friends. I mean, keep up with the latest advances on the service. Those things all appear on the website immediately. And so one of the things you could do is just pin the web app to your start screen or your taskbar, whichever one you use, and just use that. Use that as the app. You know, Google Chrome supports this notion of web shortcuts. Internet Explorer allows you to pin sites to both of those places, and those work great. And, you know, ditto on the phone. I mean, I can't solve the Instagram problem with this phone, I guess, but, you know, I found that a lot of the things that I use just in the course of a normal day, which aren't available on Windows Phone in native form, work fine on the web. And the example I have here is Google Reader, which is awesome.
And that's what Google's been saying. We don't need to make maps for Windows Phone. Just use our website.
Yeah, I have this notion for an article that I may never write, but it's sort of like, you know, it's something like web app versus native app. And, you know, it's funny to me that several years ago when Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, he intended there only to be web apps.
Right.
They had no plans at all for an app store or for native apps. And we all, you know, everyone complained and we got what we wanted and everything. But, you know, it's funny. They may have been a little ahead of the curve because, you know, with advances in HTML5 and so forth, you know, web apps can be incredibly powerful. And, you know, depending on what you need, they may be enough. You know, Google Reader is a good example where I've downloaded and used every single Windows Phone mobile app that uses Google Reader as a back end, and some of them are fine. But then you use Google Reader, the web app version, which, you know, you can pin to your start screen and all that stuff. It looks beautiful on Windows Phone. It looks beautiful on any mobile device. And that's an example of one that just works fine.
It might be a necessity on Windows Phone since, you know.
Yeah. I happen to use a lot of web apps day to day. And in Windows 8, Windows 7, you can use them as if they were native apps almost. I mean, they work pretty well that way. So don't always, you know, I guess what I'm just saying is, you know, just because the mobile app doesn't exist doesn't mean that you can't get along fine.
You know, it's
it.
Funny that you should say that because Sarah Lane and I were talking about iPad today and what we'll talk about, not this week, but next week. And I said, let's do web apps. Let's say, you know, because normally we have our apps, we pick apps.
Yep.
And I said, you know, I agree with you 100% that the HTML5 has matured to the point where we can actually talk about some pretty compelling
apps. But they're
even
great games in HTML5. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And they don't need Flash. No, right. I agree with you. Your software pick of the week.
Yeah, this one, I arrived at this one, I think like a week or so ago. And then, of course, now I've gotten 100 emails about it. But one of the big issues with the Windows 8, of course, is if you're using it on the desktop, you don't want to see the start screen. You want to go right to the desktop. It doesn't, I don't recommend, or I would never recommend anything that actually got rid of any of the Metro features in Windows 8. I think that's kind of silly. But if you're going to work in the desktop, to me, it makes sense to sit down in front of your computer, log in, and be at the desktop. And so I've been looking for a tool that does this. And I found one called WinArrow Skip Metro Suite, which is kind of a weird
name.
But it works as advertised. It's funny. And it also, whether you want this or not, it also happens to work across all your user accounts. But what it does is basically just put a little, probably startup program in there that skips by the start screen. When you log in, it goes right to the desktop. It's great. It's free. It works well. And it doesn't have any additional UI. You know, like I think there's a Start 8 program that also offers this feature, but it gives you like a start button in Windows 8, which I don't think is necessarily
just go to the
necessary.
Desktop. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Yeah, just go right to the desktop. Yeah. That's all.
Go to the desktop.
It's probably going to be 100 of these things within weeks, but
it's an easy thing.
This one works well.
Yeah. Mary Jo, you have an enterprise pick of the week?
I do. System Center 2012 Service Pack 1, which I've made a pick before, but it's now available as of this week, I believe, to volume licensees. And there's a lot of reasons you should care about this, even though it's, quote, just a service pack. It adds support for Windows Server 2012. It integrates with the Windows Azure virtual machines that we talked about earlier. And it's also a way through this new connector that's part of it, or at least connected to it, to manage your Windows RT tablets, your iPads, and your Windows Phone 8 devices. So it's now available if you're a volume licensee. It's also on MSDN and TechNet. So if you're a System Center user and you have the new version 2012, you probably want to grab Service Pack 1.
And our code name of the week. Somewhere
code name
we pick- all want to go right now.
Yes, Orleans is the code name pick of the week. And Orleans is a Microsoft research project that we haven't heard a lot about for a couple of years. What it is a new cloud programming model. So as one person described it, Orleans is to Windows Azure as the CLR, the Common Language Runtime, is to Windows. It's got a runtime element. It's a whole new model of how to program to the Azure cloud. And the reason it's the pick this week is the Halo team actually has done a pilot with the Orleans team. So they ran the Halo service, or at least parts of the Halo service, on Orleans and using Orleans this past year, which means to me that Orleans probably is pretty close or at least likely to go commercial. And if you know Microsoft research, not everything there turns into a commercial product. So I'd say Orleans has a pretty bright future in terms of either being something that Microsoft ends up using internally going forward, as part of their core infrastructure in the cloud, or maybe even makes available to developers who want to use Azure in the cloud as well.
And I love it that it's by the Halo team.
I know. That was pretty crazy. I mean, that's like the most robust test drive you can do, pretty much, if you're a cloud service.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I guess we couldn't really end the show without a beer of the week.
Yeah. So my beer pick of the week, I'm gonna go out on a limb and do this because I had fun. I tweeted about this earlier. There's a site called Untappd, untappd.com, where you can keep track of all your beer picks and all. But there is a Windows Phone 8 app that matches up with this that we've talked about a little on the show before called Beer. That's the real name of the app, the store.
Beer.
And I've been using it lately to keep track of my beer challenge, and it's working really well. And I've noticed a lot of Windows Weekly listeners are on Untappd. So I'm MJ Foley on Untappd. So if you're on, add me. Let's see how many users we can get on Windows Weekly on the beer challenge.
Now, does this bar have 40 different beers on tap?
Every day, yep.
40. That's better than our taps down the road. That's awesome.
Yeah.
How many rows of taps is that? That just goes on for miles.
One long row. Yeah, wow. Paul's been there before with me.
Wow.
Yep. It's Rattle and Hum. If you ever come to New York, Rattle and Hum on 33rd Street.
Love the name. Isn't that a U2 album? Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
So the 40 beers you have 30 days to try are the ones on tap.
Yeah, except they change every day, so you have to kind of
keep track.
Keep up with all the styles.
Hence
yeah.
the app.
Yeah, hence the app.
Beer. So you beer. let your Lumia pick your beer for you.
It's this app isn't perfect by any stretch, and they've had some problems, but right now it's the only client for Untappd on Windows Phone 8, so
That's it.
It's what we get.
Although Untappd says there's a mobile. Have you tried m.untappd.com? I mean, is that working?
Yeah, okay. That works well.
I had to use that for a while when it wasn't working.
Yeah, that works well. And then, there's Untappd clients for iPhone and for Android phones. If you're
I'm surprised
the Windows
by the beers they have in there, to be honest.
I know. They have everything.
Makes me want to drink more
beer. I put in
beer.
Some stupid stuff and it's come up. So.
Yeah.
That's what I drink.
I use Corked, which is a wine equivalent of
that.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Actually, apparently,
Mary Jo and I would be on the bottom part of the Titanic, Leo.
And I would be up on top, of course. We'll be drinking the sparkly, bubbly wine upstairs while the steerage class folks will be drinking a little beer downstairs.
Uses their Windows phones and their M-Beer apps.
Yes, they do like that Windows phone, don't they, lovey? I prefer to pay for my ads. Paul Thurrott is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley at ZDNet's allaboutmicrosoft.com. Both of them do a stellar job, not only covering Windows news, but keeping you, Paul especially, keeping you like using Windows effectively, reliably. I guess that's why he's written those great books, Windows Secrets, the Windows 8 Secrets, and of course the...
Oh, thank you for pushing the Delphi 3 Super Bible on the Christmas special, by the way, because... I'm pretty sure I got
some copies.
Nice sales kick out of that.
No, that would be funny.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. That's the only book of yours I really cherish.
Me too. It's been all downhill since the Delphi
first
Super
one. Bowl. Yeah, the first one's always the best. You never forget the first one. All right, Paul and Mary Jo, it's been a great way to start the year. We'll talk next week. We do the show Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC at twit.tv. And I certainly hope you will join us for that. But if you can't watch live, I think it's actually 2000 UTC now because of the time change. If you can't watch live, please do watch after the fact. You can subscribe on all of the, the podcast clients and get it automatically. We've got audio and video. And you can go back in time and look at the older shows, too, by just going to twit.tv. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for joining me. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. We've really downplayed CES this year. I'm going to go because I'm going to the Podcast Expo. I'm speaking and hosting the Podcast Awards. And then Ford and Stitcher asked us to come down and spend the day Tuesday. Are you going to be there? No.
No, I'm not.
Well, and that was kind of what I was thinking is that this CES, who needs CES?
I know.
Who needs to go?
CES is entertaining for people who have never been because it's such a spectacle, like the running of the bulls or something.
Right.
But it is such a disaster of epic proportions.
And the Microsoft tie-in is this will be the first year there's no Microsoft keynote. Qualcomm has replaced
Microsoft. Yeah, that'll be just, just we, sh- I'll be watching it live.
That just says exactly what's... It's over.
It's the guy over. Should just walk out and be like, yeah, we're still a company. I know.
Qualcomm, of all people.
No, it surprises me, too.
So Ford's not doing it. Microsoft's not doing it. I don't think CES is going away. Maybe it is. I don't know. Comdex was huge before it collapsed.
I bet it's that's a good point, actually. So, well, I bet it's roughly comparable to last year, to be honest. I don't think Microsoft not being there is not what's
it has been going up small, you know, 10% each year for the last few years. So I don't know. I'd be very curious. But I just think that the internet has completely eliminated the need for trade shows, period. Just done. Yeah. There's no PR benefit. If you're talking to dealers, there's plenty of ways to talk to them.
You know, Isaac Asimov saw this coming.
Did he?
Yeah.
In Foundation?
Absolutely.
What did he say?
Virtual meetings. Actually, it was one of the robot novels. It was just like the lack of need for in-person anything.
Yeah.
You know, giant video
walls.
We
don't even want to see each other in person anymore.
I could barely stand doing this.
I want to lock my door.
I'm such a recluse.
Exactly.